Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is the kettlebell warrior, Bill Esch. This is the podcast. I absolutely loved today's episode. As someone that's a bit of a fitness geek, a self-proclaimed fitness geek, where anything to do with health or fitness, especially areas that I'm not super familiar with, I completely geek out on. And kettlebells is one of those areas, something that I've experimented with myself. I use it quite regularly in my training, but I've never actually spoken to somebody who's had the level of knowledge and expertise when it comes to kettlebell training. And today's expert guest is exactly that. Bill has a credentials list that is the length of your arm, between American record holder for kettlebell sports, the long cycle in the 85 and 78 kilo weight class. He's got USAW sports performance specialist, certified metabolic typing advisor. The list goes on. And in today's episode, for the first half, we do a big geek out on something that I haven't previously covered, and that is the world of kettlebell training versus kettlebell sport. So what got Bill into that world, how he started to introduce kettlebells into his own training and then progressed into the world of breaking world records and competing in the sport of kettlebells. The second half of the podcast then, we go a little bit more mainstream. So the general biggest misconceptions he sees around kettlebells, CrossFit's impact on the world of kettlebell exposure, some of the things he's changed his mind about in recent years, and how to eat, sleep, and use kettlebells to get lean, to get shredded, to change your body composition. So there's a lovely contrast in today's episode. The first half, going heavy into the world of kettlebell sport. Again, me scratching my own itch, a complete fitness geek in the first half of today's episode. And in the second half, we get very practical on how you can implement that style of training, a certain style of eating, and gear your lifestyle towards getting more functional, losing body fat, building muscle, getting stronger by using kettlebells. Wide-ranging conversation within that narrow niche of kettlebells when it comes to lifestyle philosophy, diet, sleep, recovery. So without further ado, here is today's expert guest, the kettlebell warrior, Bill Esch, on kettlebell training versus kettlebell sport, world records, and getting shredded with kettlebells. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Bill Esch, aka the Kettlebell Warrior. Starting with a background in Olympic weightlifting, Bill discovered kettlebell sport in his late 20s. After 5 years of dedicated training, he became the first American male to achieve the rank of Master of Sport International class in kettlebell sport. Bill has earned his title as the Kettlebell Warrior. He trained with the Russian national team coaches and competed in kettlebell sport for more than a decade. In his 28 years of owning and working in gyms, Bill has had the privilege of coaching a wide range of people and abilities. For Bill, fitness is an art, and he uses his creativity to keep workouts fresh and clients inspired. Bill helps people defend their health and find the power within to change their lives. I'm looking forward to talking all things kettlebells and fitness in general in today's episode. Bill, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you. That's a great intro. Almost felt like it wasn't about me.
Bill, you are an absolute badass. Since we've been chatting on Instagram, I've been trying out some of your kettlebell workouts. I did one of your recent workouts. I think that was the name of it. It was to do with kettlebells. It was clapping push-ups. And it nearly broke me. I'm like, these are some great training sessions. So I'm looking forward to chatting everything today. But before we do that, talk a little bit about your background in fitness. What kind of got you into your love for fitness, especially around kettlebells? Because I know you fell into that in your late 20s or so. Talk a little bit about your backstory.
Well, I started working in a gym when I was 12. So I have a little bit of, I kind of grew up doing it and started there because I started playing American football at that time. And I needed to put on some size. And so my dad, who really didn't know that much about weightlifting and fitness, knew a guy, right, that did. And it turned out that this guy was an Olympian, had qualified for the Olympic team in Olympic weightlifting. So I learned to snatch and clean and jerk before I learned to bench press. This gentleman also ran a a rehab facility. So a lot of people with back injuries and knee problems and things like that. And so I started off cleaning the gym there. And then after, you know, not a ton of time, maybe a year or two, I started working with people because I was just there all the time. I was a gym rat. Right. And I still love Olympic weightlifting. And so I did that for a number of years. I mean, I worked at this place for like 8 years, all the way through college and even while I was playing collegiate football. And then I went over and worked at a local community center as an assistant athletic director over there, and then had my own gym for about 10 years. And now I am a Pilates director over at there's a larger fitness facility or fitness organization here in town or in the States, this Lifetime Fitness. And so that's just kind of been, I've been obsessed with it ever since I was young and kind of all aspects of it. When I had my own place, I remember, so it was probably 2006, 2005, I came across kettlebells. And I actually kind of stumbled across kettlebell sport, I think, on YouTube. And I remember watching and being like, oh my gosh, that's endurance Olympic weightlifting. I'm like, I bet I'd be decent at this. Because I was a really good endurance athlete. And I really wasn't like, I mean, there's some guys that are just twitched and they're super explosive. I wasn't one of those guys. I'd learned a lot of technique in Olympic weightlifting, which especially in the U.S., you know, I wouldn't say it wasn't until the last decade that that information, like good information on Olympic weightlifting, had gotten out. And so, you know, I was able to like set records in, you know, collegiate strength room and stuff like that. But that was all basically just because my technique was really good. It wasn't because there was guys that were way more just twitched and powerful. And so when I saw the kettlebell sport, I was like, oh, boy, I'm like this I bet I'll do all right at. And so I called up Steve Cotter, who at the time, I live in Omaha, Nebraska, which is the middle of the United States. And Steve Cotter lives out in San Diego. And so I called him up and we set up a time and I trained with him for like a week and a half. And he was like, you know what? You should go to the IKFF, which is the International Kettlebell and Fitness Federation, is going to have a world championships. It was in just outside Detroit. In Novi, Michigan, and I don't know, I was doing this in April, and let's see, that was in November of that year. So I went home, I had a set of 24 kilo bells and maybe 16s at that time. And so I trained for my first meet. And at that time, because it was so new, I went, I competed, and I set an American record with the 24 kilo bells. And then just was really hooked from there. And then just kind of, you know, you just kind of keep falling into it, finding different coaches, different organizations, and pushing ahead. So that's my history.
I want to park on that for a second. And one of the things that jumped out there, you talked about some of your records, also your credentials. I'm actually going to link them in the show notes for today's episode. You just have a list of records and credentials as long as an arm. It's absolutely incredible. I looked at it and was like, on all the different areas that you're qualified in and things that you've done. But I want to park on the kettlebell sport just because this was something that really interested me as someone that came from a bodybuilding background, and now I do ultra endurance events, so ultra marathon, Ironman, triathlon. I've kind of transitioned out to the other side. I'm not super and haven't been up until research for this podcast super familiar with kettlebell sport. Can you tell everybody listening the difference between kettlebell training generally and kettlebell sport?
Yes. So most people, kettlebells really got popularized, especially in the United States and probably most everywhere else in the world, by Dragon Dore and Pavel Satsalin with hard style, right? I mean, is that kind of how you first heard about it?
That's exactly who I heard about it from, yeah.
And Pavel took a very fitness approach to kettlebells in the sense that he really applied kind of powerlifting techniques to the kettlebell, which is great. It's a great intro. The thing is that the kettlebell is really this unbelievable conditioning tool. And just like, for instance, if you're running, no one tells you to get as tight as you can and then, you know, go at it, right? Like that's not the theme. And kettlebell sport started in Russia. Basically, what they wanted to do was increase their rate of fire with cannonballs. And so to better train their soldiers, they attached a handle to a cannonball and started training. Now, if you can imagine, a lot of that has to be repeated fast work. So you have to learn how to stack the body correctly, but you also have to learn how to keep this relaxed tension where you're using the elasticity of the body and using your breath to conserve energy and really produce a ton of work while not expending as much as you possibly can, which I feel like with when you get into like hard style, a lot of it is contract as hard as you can, swing hard, breathe hard, everything's hard, which is great when you don't have the your basic hinge and squat mechanics down. But once you learn to stack your bones, it's now about how relaxed can you stay. Because kettlebell sport, what it is, it's 10-minute events classically. They have marathons, which are like half-hour events. But the classic is they do the biathlon, which is the short cycle or the jerk for 10 minutes. So you have two, like in the professional division, for a male, you'll have two 32-kilo bells. So for Americans, it's 140 pounds total. And you'll jerk it for 10 minutes straight. And you never set the bells to the ground. Once they go to the ground, you're done. And then you have usually anywhere from 20 to 30 minute intermission, and you'll snatch one 32 kilogram bell for 10 minutes. The other event, which is the one that I'm proficient in, is the long cycle. So the clean and jerk, which is again, two 32 kilogram bells, and you're going to clean them and jerk them for 10 minutes straight. And what these events are really Russian, it's a Russian military sport. And the reason it's a Russian military sport or that it's a military sport is because it takes this ability to really stay calm under a huge amount of duress. And how much work can you produce while doing that? And so as far as its applicability to military and to like any type of endurance sport, it's huge. It's enormous because not only is it training like power and rhythm, but it's training breath. And more than anything, it's training you how to calm the F down when you are in absolute like utter like agony. And you really have to dial it in and focus in on your breathing and let everything else go because you can only focus on that step in front of you. And most endurance athletes understand this. Especially as you get towards the end of the race, and it's like, what do you got to think about? Well, think about that next step. Think about that next breath. Just you start gambling with yourself. Like, okay, if I can make it to that tree, right? If I can make it that next couple extra steps, can I calm down? Can I shake out my arm? Whatever it is. Well, kettlebell sport typically condenses that into by typically between minute 5 and minute 7 is when that really, really digs in, and you have to really start to like basically let go of everything. And it's in that letting go and not wasting any energy, not even wasting energy on showing agony. And that's what those guys that are at that top level do. And that is specifically why it is a military sport. And you can't do it where you're getting ultra tight like that. It works 100% against you.
How would you go about training for that? I'm very curious. Is it a case of, this is pure me geeking out now on the training side because I love kettlebells personally, but how do you train for that? Is it constantly designing workouts around those, you know, three main lifts? Or is it you're using variations of the kettlebell to kind of build strength in other areas that'll cross over? I have no idea how one would train for that. Can you kind of expand on that or go a little bit deeper into what a structured program or even an idea on what a workout program would look like training for kettlebell sport?
All right. Well, okay, great. So if we're specifically talking about kettlebell sport, and we'll just say you're completely new, there's going to be X amount of time of which you are working drills, just positioning drills, different parts of the swing, right? So you can break the swing down into like the single arm swing specifically. We'll go with that. So we'll first talk about like the snatch. So in the snatch, you have the backswing, and you typically are using what's known as a pendulum swing. So the knees actually follow, like as you follow that arc curve of the bell and as the hand comes into like your hips and center of mass, your knees are actually kind of following it back. So they actually straighten out a bit in the back end. And this is possible because you can, because the momentum of the bell is coming into your center of mass. At that time, then you begin to like shift the hips down and you start going into basically accelerating it forward, and you go into the acceleration swing. So you're starting to get into like your hips come down, you swing through, and you start countering the bell weight back by leaning back, and then you get into the acceleration pull. And so there's drills that you would drill out like that. There's other things that you can do where you get in front of you practice in front of a wall and learn how to keep the bell towards your center of mass. And there's a bunch of when I first started working with Sergey Rudnev, who was the Russian national team coach, I think he was I'll probably get the dates wrong, but it was like maybe it was like 07 to 09. I think he was a Russian national team coach. But we started off just like ghosted. So we used no bell and we just practice our breath mechanics. So like there'd be a breath in the backswing, there'd be a breath at the acceleration pull, there'd be a breath as you sat under the bell in the snatch, and there'd be a breath as you like locked it out and stood it up, and you'd focus on all these exhales. So that's kind of where you first start, is just a lot of technique. And then as your technique solidifies, you start layering it in, and then it almost becomes like either a rower, that's training, or like a runner. And if you can kind of, there's two components to kettlebell sport. There's the weight of the bell, and then there's the time, right? And then I guess there's more than two components, but then there's the cadence of which you're keeping, right? So there's a ton of different ways to vary this out, but typically as the bell weight gets lighter, you can keep a higher cadence, and you just slowly start to build time out. So let's just say like a typical program for me would be, I had a day yesterday where I'm training for a triathlon in kettlebell sport right now, which is a relatively new event where you do all three events. And I had a shorter, faster, kind of heavier day. And so I did one set of jerk for 2 minutes, trying to hold about 4 RPMs faster than my 5-minute pace. So I was holding 15 reps per minute for 2 minutes, and then I'd rest 2 minutes, and then I'd do it again at the 30 with 32 kilos. Then I'd rest another 2 minutes, and I'd go into the snatch holding a similar type pace. So on the snatch, it would just be a minute a hand, and then rest 2 minutes, and then go a minute a hand again. So it's total 2 minutes, right? And then rest another 2 minutes, and I get into the long cycle. And then there's days where you do like one set, maybe you're doing like a 5-minute run, or, and you're holding, you know, again, it's different paces. So it's very similar to like if you were on the bike or swimming or things like that, because it is an endurance event. And you can change the load and things like that, so that either maybe with a lighter load, you're trying to hold a slightly faster pace, put in a little more volume, or, you know, I mean, there's a ton of different ways to skin that cat. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. Well, how long would a typical session take you then in terms of a workout session?
Well, I do a lot of warming up. The older I get, the longer I spend.
Oh, tell me about it, Bill. You're preaching to the converted there.
And so I spend about 20 minutes at least of like doing, basically, I call it a developmental warm-up, but it's basically like mat Pilates. And then after I've kind of worked those kinks out, then I grab a bell and I'll warm up for 5 to 10 minutes with the bell doing various skill work. And then I'll get into the workout. And the workout itself, like with the bells, is typically 20 to 30 minutes. It's a little longer right now as I'm training for the triathlon. But if I was to just do the long cycle, then those are typically actual work with the bell. is 20 to 30 minutes. Then after that, you might have some strength or conditioning work. A lot of times when you're getting ready for it, you're doing a lot of circuit training. That will take about another 10 to 15 minutes. And then I stretch for 10 to 15 minutes. So it's anywhere from about an hour to an hour and 15.
Yeah, kind of a standard split in terms of like for people listening with, say, bodybuilding backgrounds or body composition backgrounds, or even the people who listen who are endurance athletes for your sprint style training, that's kind of where it would fall in. You mentioned the breathing there too, which is really interesting, just because one of the things that I noticed first, and what actually got me into kettlebells, was when I used to CrossFit. Now, this was 10, 11 years ago when CrossFit kind of started getting very popular early on. I started experimenting with kettlebells because I had always done bodybuilding style training, strength and conditioning style training before that, and never that much work with kettlebells, maybe the odd swing, but nothing crazy. Do you think CrossFit, or from your experience, has CrossFit inspired or improved the popularity in terms of kettlebells? Is that something that you've seen over the last few years, or is there something else that has seen the kind of the rise in popularity of kettlebells? Because every gym now, whether it's commercial or a CrossFit box or a hardcore S&C gym, they have kettlebells there. What do you think is down, or what are the few things you've seen as someone that's in the world of the sport and an expert in it? What do you think has led to its improvement in its popularity?
Definitely. I mean, CrossFit changed everything for anyone that did any offshoot fitness, you know, or strength sport, if you will, in that entire industry. I mean, it changed Olympic weightlifting in the United States. I mean, it used to be when I was a kid and I had to explain what a snatch was, right? I mean, that was like a 10-minute conversation. Usually by the time I was done, everyone's eyes had glazed over. But now, if I say that, people are like, oh, yeah. I mean, as if you were talking about like a bench press almost. So CrossFit has a lot, you know, love or hate CrossFit for people. It's done so much for everyone's sport. Kettlebell sport is just a bit behind in that. It looks, the thing is with kettlebell sport, it looks so funky. You're, if I post, you know, like long cycle, me doing long cycle, and I have my elbows resting to my hips, because you're, back is rounded, people think, oh my gosh, what is that guy doing to his back? But in reality, there's no pressure on my back. It's not even, I mean, there's no even muscular tension in my back at that point. All the weight of the bells is directly on my hips. And so it becomes this education that people don't really understand what they're fully looking at. And I understand why they feel that way, because everything they've been taught looks the opposite of what, you know, I'm doing or other kettlebell sport athletes are doing. In reality, it's actually very easy on your body, and people can do it well. I mean, I have clients that compete and they're almost 70 years old. And so it's this event of which doesn't take that long to get ready for, but, and you can do it at any age, but you just have to learn the technique. I would say the person that did the most is really Pavel Sotsalin. Like, that guy, he fully brought kettlebells into everyone's forefront, and it's not sport, but everybody knows what they are. And that's why I can walk into a gym and every gym has one, and almost everybody knows what it is. There's been a recent rise in popularity due to COVID. The kettlebell is this great tool of which, God, if you only have one, you can get a lot of work done and you can create a lot of general physical preparedness with it in a very small amount of space and truly a small amount of time.
I think, Bill, it was your Instagram page that I saw that there was a kettlebell shortage. Did that come up on your stories or on your Instagram?
Yeah, there was. I mean, it was, but there was a whole fitness equipment shortage everywhere, right? I mean, you couldn't find them. I mean, there was guys, I saw an article about, I wish I could remember his name, but his gym had shut down. He was in New York and he was renting kettlebells to people, you know, for like, I forget for how much, like for like $50 a day or something, right? And he'd drive the bell out to him and then come pick it up at night or something. I mean, it was some crazy story, right? But it was just, you couldn't find home fitness equipment and everybody was stuck at home. And it truly, the kettlebell is one of these great, I mean, again, it's why it's probably part of the reason why the Russian military used it, was because it didn't take up space and you could get an incredible amount of work done in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, it's the one of the reasons I love kettlebells, and I've got a 32 at home and I've got a couple of 16s, and it's just, you can do full body, you can do absolutely everything with a good kettlebell, and if you've got, you know, different weights, you can really smash out a circuit in a very short amount of time with limited space. So I'm not surprised there was a shortage when lockdown came for that exact reason. You mentioned there, I just want to double back on what you said about the, you know, the context of the rounded back with no pressure being on your back, but people spotting that without context of what you're doing and thinking, oh my God, what's he doing to his back? There's a lot of misconceptions around different training styles. I get this anytime I talk to CrossFitters or ultramarathon runners or bodybuilders in across different sports. There's a lot of misconceptions that people have because they kind of just see the tip of the pyramid, i.e. what you're doing with your back without the context of why you're doing it. What's the biggest general misconception that you tend to see when it comes to kettlebells or kettlebell training in general?
That's a great question. Some of it is just general use. So it is, I like to compare it like this. So kettlebell is a tool. It's a fitness tool. And there's tons of different tools. And I believe that when you're in fitness, you need to have an understanding of those tools and what they are. And the thing with the kettlebell and how it had traditionally – how it had been brought to me was hard style. And hard style has great techniques for powerlifting and for setting up a general idea of how to move. But they might be better techniques applied to a barbell than to necessarily a kettlebell. And I use this comparison. So it's kind of like having a wrench and a hammer. If you can use a wrench and hammer a nail in, but if you saw someone doing that, you would be like, boy, maybe they don't have a hammer available, or maybe they don't know how to use a wrench, right? And that's a little bit with, like, once you understand kettlebell sport and you realize what an incredible conditioning and strength tool the kettlebell is, and that once you learn to manipulate basically that tool and learn how to relax and position yourself, it opens an entire world of movement, of fluid, rhythmic movement. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that you're trying to get really hard, when in reality you have to learn how to stack your body, which is nuanced. I'm not saying that it's not, but that, like, you have to learn how to breathe and move with the bell and wait for the bell to come into your center of mass so that you can leverage yourself efficiently and that you can move in all these different planes with it. And it becomes this really incredible functional training tool, of which you should be able to hang on to for minutes at a time, not just reps, and that you can build this incredible work capacity and learn to, like, use, like, your own body's, like, myofascial system to move weight and to get work done. And that, I think, is one of the biggest, like, next step hurdles to learn. It's not that you can't use it for strength training, because you can. Especially, like, when it comes to, like, I mean, like, pressing 72 pounds with, like, your shoulders is a lot, right? There's different moves. But deadlifting 72 pounds is not that impressive, even for high reps, because it's a submaximal weight. And so I believe that in understanding kind of, you know, what the tool is, you can leverage it even better.
That's such a great explanation, and gives me a nice little segue to the next thing I want to talk about. And I've been definitely a victim in the past of being a man with a wrench when I should have used a hammer, that I've always thought of kettlebells for function. And it's always, for the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's always played a role in my training. Swings, variations of goblet squats, just variations of different movements, lunges where you're doing switches, overhead lunges with kettlebells. But I never really thought about, until I came across your content and your page, about using a kettlebell to get shredded. And I know this is something that you cover a lot. Your programs, your website talks about this. It's on your Instagram page and all the workouts that you put up. Talk about using a kettlebell to get shredded, or to use it to improve body composition or to lose body fat. Because I think there's a lot of people listening who are in that boat who would be very interested to hear your viewpoint on it.
Yes. Yeah. So first of all, with the losing, well, hold on, I'm gonna take a step back. I am all for you, like, whatever you have in front of you, you use. So, like, I don't want to come off as if I'm shitting on how other people use the bell, because I'm not, because it's awesome. Like, it is an awesome tool and you can definitely use it that way. But it's just, I always think there just needs to be an understanding of the possibility of what the tool can be. And so I just want to get there out there and say that, because I didn't understand what it could be until I had met people that grew up doing it a certain way. You know, I'd met Sergey Rudnov and Steve Cotter and all these other, you know, Denis Vasiliev, all these other really great kettlebell athletes and guys that are leading the way in this area specifically. But talking about getting shredded, so first off, diet plays a huge role in that, as we both know. I mean, diet and sleep, you can't talk about getting lean without really addressing that. With the kettlebell is that it can provide this very unique cardio strength aspect. You know, I had done I teach spin classes and different things like that. And I had taken a break from doing that for, I forget, I don't know, a couple of months. But I had done kettlebells every day. And we have, at the club that I'm at, we have the ability to test like VO2. And my VO2 had actually increased. I mean, I went from like 56 to, VO2 of 56 to 72 over the course of just a couple months. And it has this ability to really hit, get like increase like your top end ability. And I like to use it in a multitude of ways, especially like if you look at my Instagram, we use it in multiple planes. We'll use it for, we will use that wrench like a hammer occasionally, you know, but when it really comes down to it, a lot of it is continuous work. And learning to do that, learning to stay relaxed, learning to breathe and move through those can really make a difference in your overall body composition.
One of the, you mentioned their diet and sleep, and I definitely want to kind of touch on this because I think it's such an important area to cover. And it's funny that you mentioned there about the functionality, the strength, everything that goes up with the use of kettlebells. I remember it was in 2012, I took a break from weightlifting completely and just followed a TRX and kettlebell program for 6 weeks, and all my lifts went up. My bench, my deadlift, my squat, everything went up just because of the pure power that I was able to drive from having, you know, moving heavy kettlebells. So I just, as you were speaking there, it reminded me of that time. I totally forgot about it. But you mentioned diet there. What's your philosophy when it comes to diet? Do you have a preference in terms of how to overlap food with kettlebell style training, or is what you recommend different to what you do yourself, or what's your kind of philosophy around nutrition and diet?
Well, I've messed around with a bunch of different things throughout the years, but what I found in general, if you kind of go from the basis of that, all food that you eat is toxic, and that's why you go to the bathroom. It doesn't get into your bloodstream. It actually isn't in your body until it's in your bloodstream. So your body has to do a good job of basically not letting certain proteins and other toxins in and allowing the nutrition that needs to come in, to put it very simply. Most people, including myself, just really need to dial in and clean up our diets, just where we're eating whole foods, be it like meats and vegetables. And if you're going to eat whole grains, that you're actually having whole grain, you're not having flour, and, you know, fruits included in there. And if you kind of consider, you know, like sugar, processed dairy, and really refined flours and grains kind of being the most troublesome things, really working on keeping that out. So a lot of times, one of the first things I'll start with myself and other people on is if there's three meals a day. And let's just say you really only eat three times a day, that you're not snacking and that you're having meat and vegetables each one of those times. You know, you can kind of work the math from there. So there's 7 days a week. That's 21 meals a week. Most people get up in the morning and they have like cereal or a bagel. So they're having, you know, cereal, which has been so heavily processed that they've had to vitamin fortify it so that it actually won't make you sick or give you scurvy. And then you have a really, you know, refined processed dairy, again, that has been vitamin fortified. And typically once something has been vitamin fortified, it means it's been so processed that they've actually had to put vitamins back into it to not allow you to get sick. And then for lunch, people will have, you know, even if they're eating healthy, they're having a sandwich, right? So they're having a completely, you know, they're having flour, so a completely refined grain, again, that most of the time has been vitamin fortified. And then they're having processed deli meats. So it's added salts, sugars, and a meat that has been heavily, heavily processed. Maybe by dinner, they're having like chicken and rice and vegetables. And that's being generous, especially like if we're talking about the American population, most times like pizza or something like that, right? And so if you look at that, they're only having one meal a day that's an actual meal. And so when you break that down, if you were to grade them, that's a 33%. 7 out of 21 is a 33%. And then let's just say we double our efforts. So now we're doing 14 out of 21 meals that are good. And with that, a lot of times, like, people feel like, God, I should be a rock star. I mean, I can't believe I'm just not getting so shredded because I'm working so hard. Well, the problem is that you're a student who's getting a 66%. You went from a 33% to a 66%. So now you start showing up to class and you opened a book and you're like, oh my God, this is so hard. Yeah. Yeah. It is hard. It's really hard because you need to be at 19 out of 21, which is basically 90%. And that's even kind of the rule with most of my athletes. Now, we'll change, like, you know, maybe they need more carbs. Maybe they need, right? But, like, first we got to dial that in, because digestion is a huge part of where a lot of your calories are going. So if we can make it easier on the body to digest those foods that you were designed to eat, then it's a million times better. And, I mean, I can go down the wormhole of being more specific, but that is the really one of the most basic things that almost all of us at some point are guilty of, right? I mean, if I just go in and look at my diet most time and I clean it up and I'm like, boy, I wasn't really fully doing it. That's where I'll go, is back to that simple, you know, how many out of 21 meals or whatever, however many meals I'm having, right? But what's my grade?
I think that's such a great rule to apply. It reminds me of something else I've mentioned on the podcast in the past about whole foods and having primarily, you know, complex carbohydrates, healthy fats, complete protein sources. The grandmother rule, that if your grandmother didn't recognize it as food, you probably shouldn't eat it. And I think that eliminates most breakfast cereals, that eliminates a lot of the bars that people eat. And I think it's a kind of a good general rule of thumb 95% of the time for just staying on top of your nutrition. What about sleep then, Bill? Do you find that sleep is a really important part of your recovery personally?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, I have like blackout shades in my room. I try and, like, I don't even have a, I just use my phone as my alarm clock. So there's no like any ambient light anywhere. I really, you know, I'm a trainer, so I'm usually getting up in the morning. So I try and get to bed by like 8:30 at night and try a minimum of 8 hours. And when I can do that, I feel great. When I start cutting into that, getting, you know, six or less, it's I feel the effects.
Do you use any sleep supplements or any other? You mentioned the blackout blinds there and not having any light in your room, very similar, and going to bed, trying to get your 8 hours. I'm exactly the same. All of those three things that I try and do religiously, not always getting the 8 hours, but most of the time. Do you have any sleep aids or sleep supplements that you like to use that enhance that? Or is it just a stick to the routine and, you know, hope that that's enough to kind of keep things ticking over?
Well, the biggest thing is sticking to that routine. I do use, there's a occasional, like if I have trouble winding down at night, I will use this as Dr. Teal's. It's a Epsom salt bath with melatonin. It's pretty awesome as far as recovery goes, sitting in there for like 15 to 20 minutes. I highly recommend it. Outside of that, I mean, I've used melatonin before, but I really don't use a ton of sleep aids.
Do you use any other supplements or staple supplements as part of your nutrition because of the, and the reason I ask this is because, like, for those unfamiliar who are just listening to this on audio, like, you're shredded, you're in ridiculous shape and your workouts are so intense. Like, as I said, I followed some of them. I mentioned that at the top of the podcast. I'm just curious, do you have any staple supplements that you use for recovery or for strength or for leaning out or anything that's just kind of constantly in your cupboard or in your press in terms of you go to, or it's for recovery, anything along those lines that jumps to mind, or is it just purely the nutrition and sleep you focus on?
All right. So vitamin D. So I probably take about 2000 IU of vitamin D a day. I take a multivitamin, and then I take a magnesium at night. But really, I stay pretty religious to my multivitamin. And the rest of it is really food. I mean, I'll sneak in a protein shake here and there, but honestly, there's not a ton of those. I mean, that might only be like three times a week. I really stick to a pretty whole foods based diet and multivitamins, nothing too complicated. Vitamin D, fish oil, that's kind of standard stuff.
And I love that because of your experience and your longevity in the health and fitness industry, I think it's important for people to know that there's a foundation pillar that nutrition, recovery, sleep, all of these things are the bottom and the pyramid of prioritization when it comes to whatever fitness goal you have. And then everything else is supporting or quote unquote supplementing that potentially. So I'm glad that that was just something that reinforced. Bill, talk about the Kettlebell Warrior Savage Shred program. I think this is something that jumped out at me, and definitely down the line when I'm not training for a race or training for a program, I'm definitely going to come through this because it looks brilliant. And it's something that I wanted to pick your brain on the podcast, because there's a lot of people who will listen to what you're saying, it will connect with that message, and will potentially go down this route of following the program. Talk about the Kettlebell Warrior Savage Shred program.
Oh, thanks. So what it is it is a program where 6 weeks, and how it's laid out is that you have 4 days of kettlebell training and it progresses over those 6 weeks. So I try and build skills on top of it. I've also included a 73-minute tutorial over going over all the basic kettlebell exercise, everything from like deadlift, how to properly set yourself up, to swing, single arm swings, all the variations and parts of the snatch, the jerk, the push press, the press, the clean, you name it, how to hold the bell properly. All of those things I cover in that 73-minute tutorial, which is included. But the breakdown of the days works like this. So every day starts off with 15 minutes of developmental warm-up, which is very similar to Pilates. And so I really focus on our mobility, stretching, building that out. And then I have usually two metabolic sessions in there, which, you know, will last anywhere from 12 to 15 minutes. And then there's strength training and then stretching at the end of each day. One day, the fourth day out of every week, is set up similar to that, but I call it a challenge day. And so it's, we do some of the stuff, and I break down some of the stuff that you might see on my Instagram page. But I really tried to structure this out so that there's a real build in this, into learning all the skills, and also into very much focusing on the things that I find important and that have helped me be able to do those different skills and kind of funkier movements and maybe more complicated stuff. And that's how I built it out over those 6 weeks. There's 2 days of active recovery, and then there's also nutrition. So in that nutrition, I give a kind of a food matrix. So here's your list of foods that are good, and you should choose those. I give a diet check record. So there's everybody's slightly different in how they react to different foods and what they need at that time. And so as you record down what you're eating, there's lists of good reactions, bad reactions. So things like you felt, you know, full but still hungry, that wouldn't be a good reaction. Or you fed a ton of energy and you weren't thinking about food. You were clear-headed, you know, things like that are good reactions. And so you can kind of go through, and we can start to create this nutritional path that's very specific to you. I give sample meal plans and then different like starch ratings with foods and fruits and vegetables and grains and things like that. So it's a pretty whole program.
I'm going to link that in the show notes for anybody that's interested. Definitely go check it out if that is the area that you want to take your training and take your nutrition. As I said, Bill, I'll definitely be doing it down the line, so I'll keep you posted on that.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no bother at all, mate. I absolutely love what you do. I just have two final questions, mate, that I want to kind of pick your brain on. You've been in the health and fitness industry for so long. I know, as I said, I'm going to link just to show, and I'm literally not going to call them out in terms of credentials. I'll give you a few, you know, the Czech certified golf biomechanics and nutritional lifestyle coach, NASM performance enhancement specialist, USAW sports performance specialist. Like, you have a list of qualifications and credentials that, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, the length of my arm. And you've been in the health and fitness industry for so long, and I know you're constantly consuming information, updating your knowledge on things. So I'm curious, as somebody that has been in the industry for about 10 years, but not as long as you, what's something that you've changed your mind about in recent years, either in training or in food and lifestyle in general? Is there anything that you once believed, say 10, 15 years ago, that now you don't believe to be true, or you've completely changed your mind about based on new information or based on new research? What jumps to mind when I say that?
Well, one of my favorite things is Pilates has been very eye-opening to me. And I'm working on doing the full Pilates Method Alliance certification, which takes years to go through. And one point of which is really interesting is the concept of knees over toes and feet placement. I think, you know, if we've been in the industry long enough, it was like, never take your knees over your toes, never take your knees over your toes. And if I've learned anything throughout the years, and it's almost true of any technique, the question is why and how are you trying to do it, right? Like, how are we loading, for what, all of those things. Where it's funny, because sometimes like certain cues get, I think, drawn or like, you know, just really hammered in to people and different things. And that is one of them that was really hammered into me, where to a certain degree, you can almost get over development of like the hips and glutes and maybe upper quads and not develop your lower quads enough, or your ankle mobility in saving your knees. And so in trying to prevent, you know, the knees from hurting, as opposed to working on maybe those other pieces that aren't functioning as well. And that's one of the things that I think was a cue that I used to give all the time, was staying too much back in the heels, right? With that quote, that's the first thing that comes to mind. You know, but I think it's true of a lot of different techniques. If when we don't fully understand, you know, maybe what we're looking at, or, you know, we have to take a different view of it. So anymore, I try to be really, really open and really always ready to learn and listen to what someone has to say to me or say about something, because I might not have seen it that way and I might be missing out on something really big.
It's a real curse of knowledge that the more you know, the less you know without the context. And I love it. It's one of my favorite things about the fitness industry. The last question, Bill, you mentioned there that you've been in the gym since 12 years old. You know, it's part of your life. It's been a huge part of what you've done over the past 28 years plus. But I'm curious, and this might not be a fitness tip, this might not be a kettlebell tip even, it might be something completely different, but if you could go back to your 18-year-old self, what advice would you offer him, or what would you tell him, or somebody that's very similar to an 18-year-old Bill, what advice or what would you say to him, or what message would you give him?
Well, in the fitness industry, or just for your general fitness, one of the first things I would stress is, especially at 18, spend more time stretching. Like, spend more time on your mobility. Like, do it now, because it won't be easier when you get older. The other is just be patient. If you're in the fitness industry, be patient. You got to take your licks, and there's going to be like this sophomore year that you have where you think you know things, because I've been there. You think you're really smart, and you're not that smart yet. I wasn't, right? You learn a few things, and you learn some, and you get some, you know, good, I guess, structures in your head of how to train and things like that. And there was a lot of time that I spent just believing that I knew things, and I wasn't listening well enough. You know, I thought I deserved more than what I really did. And I think it's those types of things, you know, and just hanging in there. Like, this is an industry, if you can hang and you are open and that you just keep pushing ahead, you will be successful. I coach a lot of young trainers, and it's just be open and keep pushing ahead.
It's, I think, great advice. I think for anybody listening who is in the fitness industry, who is an athlete, or just in general, I think as life advice, be patient, take your licks, and just keep pushing forward. I think that whether you're trying to lose weight, whether you're trying to do a bodybuilding show, whether you're trying to run a marathon, whether you're just trying to do and improve your life quality in general, I think that is amazing advice. Bill, I've loved this conversation. As I said, your workouts have been something I've been following on Instagram and have been making me feel a bit sick at times, but in a very good way. Can you tell everybody listening where is the best place for them to follow you online? I assume it's the Instagram page, and a link to the website as well. I'll put those in the show notes for today's episode alongside the program.
Yeah, just go find me on Instagram at Kettlebell Warrior. Yeah, it's the best place to see me.
And the website, kettlebellwarrior.com?
Yes, correct.
Amazing. Bill, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the amazing content you put out online. I know I'm somebody that's benefited from it on the other side of the Atlantic, and hopefully there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast who will go follow you on there and try some of those soul-destroying workouts. Bill, thank you so much again.
Brian, thank you, man. I really appreciate your time.
There you have it, the kettlebell warrior Bill Esch on kettlebell training versus kettlebell sport, world records, and getting shredded with kettlebells. As I mentioned, this is definitely going to be a program I'm following at some point. Bill is one of the world's leading experts when it comes to kettlebells, and the amount of content he puts out in his Instagram page for workout ideas when it comes to using kettlebells is just incredible. So go check him out on Instagram. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit that follow, hit that subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday. For those of you who are long-term listeners, and if you got some value from today's episode, please give a rating or review or take a screenshot of today's podcast, pop it up on your Instagram story, and you can tag both myself and Bill, the Kettlebell Warrior, _ Kettlebell Warrior, and Brian_Keen_Fitness on Instagram. That's everything from this week's podcast. Catch you all next Monday.